extended time.
Good evening. This is K2 Romeo India Whiskey. And with K2 KEY, the two of us are going to attempt to answer your questions tonight. A little help of our friends. This is a TechNet. Major purpose of the TechNet, if you haven't heard it before, is to answer people's questions about this reasonably complicated hobby called ham radio. There's a lot to it. The way a person signs into the TechNet is to give us their call letters, their name, and a confirming yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like this, N2EO, Rich, and yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me a call letters and name at this time.
WB2QEQ1, yes.
Yes, the name is Joe.
Okay, I heard QEQ and Joe. QEQ first, what is your name, sir?
Len, Lima, Echo, November.
Okay, you said that, and I forgot it. Joe, give me your call letter, sir.
Yes, sir. How you doing? KC2.
Okay, we got QIW, so we got Len and Joe. Anyone else? Check it.
2MLB, Frank, yes.
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
W2PIE, Lou, no questions.
Glad to hear from you, Lou. Okay, we got Frank, MDP, I think he said he had no questions. And Lou's going to have a question. You wait and see one of these days. Okay, anyone else who would like to check in? Give me a call with his name and confirming yes if you've got a question or a comment.
And good evening. This is K2KEY.
And WS2N, Paul. Good evening, Dick.
Okay, we got Mel and Paul. Anyone else to check in? One last call. K2RIW, listening?
W2OSR, no, Dick.
Nice to hear this every week, but I have no questions.
KB2IUA, the name is John, no questions.
Okay, we got three guys with no questions. Let's start off with the first guy with a real question. Len, WB2QEQ, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. WB2QEQ, I have a two-part question. Number one first. I have a G5RV antenna up, which kind of took a beating in the last weather we had. And I'm thinking about putting it up again or going to a Carolina Wyndham. I was wondering if you could, you know, maybe just give me a little hint on that. You got any ideas? I don't want you to make any recommendations, but... Is the Wyndham any better than a GI-5OV or whatever? Over to you.
John, good question, Len. I don't think I've got an answer on that one. I'm hoping Mel does. He uses HF antennas a lot more than I do. Mel, what do you think is the combination of those two? If you had a choice, which one would you put up? K2KEY, you got it.
Okay, thank you. This is K2KEY. Good evening to all. Difference between a Carolina Wyndham and a G5RV. The G5RV, even though that it most likely will cover a number of bands, the Wyndham is going to be a little bit longer. I assume that you have the G5RV up there because you're using a compromise in length. In other words, you're confined to a certain length and cannot maybe go much longer. Am I correct? Over.
That's affirmative. I'm short on length on this, so I have a short, very short G5RV up there, which works, when it was up, worked fairly well. But there are some short Carolinas, too, so, you know, that's my question.
Okay, that's why. All right, now the G5RV I'm using, is it from 10 meters through 40, or is it covering also part of 80 meters? Over.
10 through 40. I don't have enough, at least at this point, unless Carolina can do it, I can't work 80 at all.
Okay. Well, then the point is, what you are basically saying is that you're using, like I say, jamming in, you're able to get the G5RV just in, and that's it. The Carolina Wyndham, even though they have a foreshortened version, it is still going to be somewhat a little longer than the G5RV, so if you can afford approximately, I believe, about 10% more space, you can go to the Carolina Wyndham. The Carolina Wyndham is somewhat of a good, effective radiator. Of course, it will work in a number of configurations, which may help you. You can put it into an inverted V type of configuration, which may help you be able to spread out the additional distance. They both are, for what you know you're looking to do, both will be most likely somewhat equal, but I think if you can put the Carolina Wyndham in a somewhat of an inverted V type configuration, you may find it a little bit more effective as far as an antenna, especially for DXing. I assume is that what you're looking for, an antenna to give you somewhat decent DXing over?
That's affirmative. One other question. I'm trying to figure, I guess I'm just wondering whether I can put it up, you know, east-west or north-south, or I don't know. Is there any particular way to put that up as far as polarity goes that's somewhat better for Long Island?
Well, that's, you know, subjectable to say that, because basically if you look at a dipole, it's basically a dipole configuration. If you can visualize a dipole, actually, now, everybody thinks that a dipole really has broadside much greater lobes, but not necessarily so. Basically, in the best of situations, if you look at a dipole, you could look down from space, and at your dipole, what's coming off of it, you can visualize, actually see the signal. You would see it somewhat looks like a big donut or a bagel-shaped signal. If you can picture that, that's what basically the radiation pattern would look like coming off that type of antenna. However, it does have somewhat bulges on either side that are broadside to the antenna. However, if you go into the configuration of somewhat of an inverted V, you will pick up some bit of lower angle radiation, which may help on some of the long hauls. How much it'll help, I don't know. What actually, it depends on your location, how much, you know, how much lower angle radiation you'll pick up. But I have heard them working using similar antennas like the Carolina Wyndhams and all in the inverted V position, and it seems to be a fairly decent antenna. It's about the best I can answer. Maybe, Dick, you could answer this. This is K2KEY.
Pretty fine, Mel. Sounds like Mel's got a lot more experience with either of those antennas than I do. I've used dipoles. I've used inverted Vs. A buddy of mine has used a Wyndham and was reasonably happy with it. In either case, the wire itself of the antenna determines what angle of radiation comes off of it. When Mel was talking about the bagel shape, if you look down from space and make believe you've got a bagel not laying flat on the table, but up on end. The bagel is standing up, and the wire is going straight down the hole of the bagel. And the wire, usually you set it up parallel to the ground. Well, where that bagel is where the signal is coming from the strongest. And obviously quite a bit of signal is going up in the air, as well as to the north and to the south if you set up the wire east-west. It fires broadside. And if the wire is straight, it does give you a reasonably deep null off the end. So an east-west wire will give you the least amount of signal east and west, but there's a catch. Make it an inverted V, and all of a sudden that deep null you would have off the ends becomes vertical polarized off the ends, even though north and south it would be horizontally polarized. So something to be said with an inverted V. Now, a G5RV and almost any kind of a dipole can be made into an inverted V. I've never heard of anyone doing it with a Carolina Wyndham, but I think it could be. A wire itself as an antenna, Len, as you already know, is not super expensive, and therefore most of us do quite a bit of experimenting with it. If you've got the time and the patience, you could set one wire up east-west, one north-south, make one an inverted V and one not an inverted V if you got the right number of trees and towers and houses and chimneys and things to suspend it from. So I would make an investment, buy some wire and buy some feed line and set up a number of them and have all those cables coming into the house and try each one of them. Each one of them will have a certain advantage, certain days, certain angles you're talking to. In other words, whether you're talking to attempting to talk to a guy in Michigan or attempting to talk to a guy in London, one of those wires is going to work better. Don't worry about putting up a whole lot of wire in the air. In general, people do not see wire, and they do not look up in the air. You've heard me say to Don many times, ask all the friends that ever visit you, what are the colors, what's the color of the shingles on your house? And they probably can't tell you. Rarely do people look up in the air. And if you've got great big massive antennas, they might see them. But just pieces of wire? No. They don't see all those Con Ed wires. They're not going to see your wires. So string a lot of them as long as you've got the supports to do it. And it's a fun thing to experiment with antennas. There's no end to them. When it comes to the HF people, they tend to talk about wire antennas most. But if you get all of the VHF and UHF antennas, there's 5,000 kinds of antennas. And by the way, just this week, I heard an announcement from the SciTech Book Company that will give you a cut rate on the fourth edition of my favorite antenna book, which is called Antenna Engineering Handbook. And it's got a new author, the fourth book. They've added a couple more chapters, redone all the chapters, added a whole lot of color photographs. And so if you want to dig into antennas, that is the book. Go to a good technical library. The fourth edition doesn't come out, by the way, until May, although I think they're going to issue some early ones in April for the people who sign up early, and me and a few of my buddies at the salt mine have signed up for that antenna. Darn good book to crack whenever you see one in the library or you get your hands on it by whatever means, but it's a little bit like the dictionary. You don't open up the front end of the dictionary and read cover to cover. You go to the word you need at that time. Well, the same thing with that antenna book. You go to the chapter that's got the kind of antenna you want to study. And so Windom antennas and dipole and wire-like antennas, is one or two chapters devoted to that. And just go straight to that chapter. And now, when it comes to lots of good practical engineering information on the kinds of antennas Mel and Lou are discussing right now, the number one book for that class of antennas, I think, is the latest issue of the ARL antenna book. Lots of darn good information in there. And that's a book definitely worth reading cover to cover. It's going to take you a couple of months to do it. In my opinion, it's a darn good investment. So I know you didn't get a clear answer on this one, Lou. There isn't a clear answer. Would I be happier if I marry a blonde or a brunette? Well, I could be happy with either one. Will I be happier with a G5RV or a Carolina Windom? And in your case, where you're squeezing them down, that's another good area for experimentation. There's quite a few ways of making an antenna physically smaller but electronically tuned. Capacitive top hats at the end, loading coils in the middle, zigzagging the wire. And the magic thing about the antenna to make it resonant is that it's got the right electrical length. And I said the word electrical, which is a little bit different than physical. When you zigzag the wire, you may have to do a little bit of experimenting of adding or subtracting some wire in the end with clip leads until you hit resonance, if resonance is important to you. If you've got a good antenna tuner, you force resonance to happen in the antenna tuner, and it's part of what I'm talking about when it comes to electrical resonance. But almost every antenna we intend to use, you resonate it first by some means, and then it will radiate. And that resonance can be the way you zigzag loads and whatever and put top hats on it and loading coils and bend it in various ways. Or that resonance, as long as your feed line is low enough and lost, the resonance can be established in the antenna tuner. Tune across 20 meters any day and you'll hear people saying terrible things about antenna tuners. They don't deserve that. They don't deserve those bad words that people say. I think you've got a second or another question added to this, Lou, so we'll turn it back to you. WB2QE2, K2LIW, on the TechNet.
I got one more thing, Dick.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, well, this is K2KEY. Maybe I didn't explain maybe the Wyndham exactly. I'm thinking about, you know, the Wyndham. It's been some years since I more or less looked into Wyndham and things of G5RV. The Wyndham actually, the Carolina Wyndham was actually an outgrowth as well as of the original Wyndham antenna, which was an antenna that worked actually against ground. What was also known as the OCF antennas, the off-center fed antennas, they all became in that category. What they did is modify the Wyndham so it would be fed with coaxial cable. But the classic Wyndham antenna, the original classic Wyndham antenna, was basically a wire that was off-center fed. And then a single wire came down and then was fed and worked against ground. That's the classic Wyndham. And then they modified it. Now they made it so that it's more like now an OCF antenna, an off-center fed type of antenna, where it's fed with coaxial cable. I don't know if that clarifies, but I'm trying to remember exactly, you know, the difference between the three categories of it, of the Wyndham, the OCF off-center fed, and the Carolina Wyndham, Dick, over.
And so we Rich recognized, but I got a quick question for Mel. When my buddy built the ordinary Wyndham way back in the dark ages of 1956-57 when I first got my license, it was a single wire off-center fed as a feeding mechanism. When you feed it with coax cable, and it's still off-center fed, it is my guess, Mel, that the balancing device you use there is a little bit more important than it is with an ordinary center fed dipole. I wonder if you found that to be true, Mel. Go ahead.
Yeah, most definitely. You hit it right on the nail right on the head, Dick. You need a step-up transformer, usually a 1-4, to match it. In fact, they were selling transformers 1-4, but then they came up with Jerry Civic. You know, he did a series of articles, and he touched upon it, and I remember distinctly that he showed, and that's when the modifications came up with the Wyndham, that they would use a 1-6 transformer, Dick, over.
Yeah, Jerry Civic is W2FMI, and he had a whole series of articles. I'm trying to think now, way back in the 80s, I guess it was, on all kinds of small antennas. So some of those antennas he had his wife sitting under an umbrella in a lawn chair in the middle of his great big lawn, and that was the vertically polarized antenna. So he did quite a few experiments with toroids for impedance matching, as well as electrically small antennas. I guess he covered the Wyndham also. So, as you can see, Len, there's no clear cut. In other words, you're going to find quite a number of people who like antenna A and some other people who like antenna B. In fact, let's find out which favorite Rich likes and does he have experience with Wyndham and G5RV. N2EO, go right ahead, Rich. KQRIW in the second half.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Well, you may remember last week, me and Barry were going to get together and put up an inverted V on Saturday, and we did it. It was getting fantastic results. It's a half-wave inverted V on 80. About 10 feet short of a half-wave. It's a folded dipole made out of ladder line and fed with ladder line. And I use a DX Engineering 4-to-1 balun at the bottom and then coax to the tuner. Stuff is rocking in here 20, 30, 40 over 9. And Barry said that before he had trouble hearing me unless I ran the kilowatt. Now with 100 watts, he said I'm 20 over 9. Back to you, Dick, and 2EM.
Yes, I see that, Len and Rich. That's another darn good testimonial for an inverted D. I think an inverted D has a reasonably clear advantage over an ordinary flat dipole. You see a schematic diagram in a book or the questions and answers that you study, when they show you diagrams of a dipole, almost always it's shown flat out. And there are people who are scared to death to zigzag it vertically, horizontally, or anyway. Well, most of us have a single support somewhere in the property that's the highest support. And if that's the center of a inverted V dipole, you can pick up quite a bit of advantage. Common sense would lead you to believe where the ends of the inverted V dipole come closer to the ground that you're sacrificing performance. Believe it or not, in many circumstances, you gain performance when the ends slope toward the ground, particularly off of the ends. In other words, if the antenna is east-west, and you normally would have a deep null to the east and the west, if it's an inverted V, you're going to have a potent amount of signal to the east and the west, and it may come off there with just the right angle for the ionosphere to talk to your particular buddy. But again, if you've got multiple cables coming into the house because you've got a couple of different wire antennas up there, and you can switch between them, guarantee it's going to make you happy. I hope we've talked you into putting up a little bit more wire of more than one antenna in your backyard, Lou, and compare them. And then come back as a homework assignment, we're giving that to you, and come back and tell us which one you liked and which days. We want to hear about it. WB2QEQ, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Comment.
Who is it that said comment?
Yeah, hi, Dick. Frank, K2MLB. I just wanted to say Lou had mentioned, or Len, rather, I'm sorry, that about his antenna being short. But I wonder if he has a standard G5RV that's 102 feet long, because he said he couldn't get on 80 meters. And also, he didn't mention if he has a tuner. But, you know, I got a G5RV up here, and yes, if he uses a tuner, he can easily get on 80 meters.
Okay, I may have called him Len by mistake, and I think it's Lou, but QEQ, go right ahead, sir.
Okay, it's a short G5RV. I'm using a Z100. Well, 80 meters is not worth the trouble, let me put it that way. But anyway, I don't want to tie up the net. I seem to be monopolizing this thing with my antenna problems, but... Rich, if you can still hear me, and 2EO, I'll give you a call tomorrow. We haven't spoken for a while, and maybe we could hash some things over. I had another question, but like I say, I'm really tying up the net, and I really appreciate all you guys' input. But, you know, if you don't want to go on to the second part, please feel free to go on to somebody else. WB2QEQ.
KB1OQD. KB1OQD. Start off with your name and your comment, sir.
First name is Bob, Dick. I sent you some email. I don't know if you got it there in reference to W2PNJ there last week when I was on the net with you guys there. I'm over here in Connecticut by the Westchester Airport. You sent me a manual there for my Kenwood TR7850, and I just sent the email. I don't know if he's out there now, but I wanted to thank him very much and you for all the help that you guys have given me. I appreciate it. I'll wait for the next round there for a question there. I'll sit back here and listen, but I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, I know that you received that beautiful manual according to the email you sent me, and you didn't know how to get back to W2PNJ to thank him for it. And so, PNJ, if you're listening, Your ears should be itching, and people appreciate what you did. Lou, Len, please hang around. We've only got a couple of guys ahead of you. We're going to come back to your second question. Let's pick up Joe, KC2QIW, I think it is. Joe, go right ahead with your first question.
Yeah, hi. How you guys doing? How you doing, Dick? Yeah, my question is, when you say I'm going to return the repeaters to normal operations, do I need a special tone to talk on that repeater? Because a couple of weeks ago, I was scanning, and then I was trying to talk to these guys when I was mobile, and they're saying, he doesn't have the right tone to get through the repeater.
Yep, I know what you're going through, Joe. Because this net, they want to open it up to everybody, no matter where the heck they come from, no matter what faith they are, so to speak, they turn off the PL function. PL stands for private line. Most of the repeaters in the metropolitan area, in order for the signal to be repeated, there must be an extra tone turned on. at 136.5. It's a very low amplitude, very low frequency sine wave, just a little bit higher than a hum, but it's got to be very precise, 136.5 hertz, or cycles per second. It's that tone, it's called PL tone, it's got to be there, otherwise the repeater says, that guy ain't real, I ain't going to repeat him. Well, they turn off that function for this net and maybe a couple of other nets, so at this time, anybody can get through. During the rest of the week, without that tone generator, you won't. If you have an older rig that doesn't have the built-in tone generator, you can buy it as a small PC board and add it. Almost every rig made, every transceiver, every desktop radio, whatever, made in the last 10 years or so, no self-respecting manufacturer would issue a radio that doesn't have the tone function called PL, private line, or CTCSS is another continuous tone squelch system, I think is what it stands for. If you look in your owner's manual, if your rig is something like 10 years old or less, and you look in the owner's manual, you'll find out about the PL function. It may be written in Japanese. Maybe it's going to take somebody to interpret it for you. But once you turn on that function, then you can get onto this repeater anytime during the week. I wonder if that makes it a little bit more clear, Joe. KT2QIW, KT2IW on the TechNet.
Yeah, thank you. And also with the Yonkers repeater too, I think I need a tone set on my, I have a Yaesu FT2800. I gotta set that. I think it's off. I'm looking at my owner's manual right now. I just gotta look it over. Oh, okay. So I guess, yeah, thank you. Thank you for the answer. I wasn't sure, you know?
That's a good question, and there'll be other people who need that information. Almost all the repeaters in the metropolitan area on 2 meters, 146 megacycles or 147 megacycles, almost all of them use 136.5 as the required tone, and the tone is also called 4Z, number 4 and the letter Z for Zulu. There's just two different ways of designating the exact same tone. When it comes to 450 repeaters, they use other tones. The whole purpose of the tone is to only let through signals from the right area. We're entering the time in late April, beginning of May, into June, when we start getting some pretty good band openings, where all of a sudden 2 meter signals, because of atmospheric conditions, start coming in from Virginia and Michigan and occasionally Florida and whatever. And those repeaters, those signals from that far away, coming through our repeater locally, would at times create confusion. Because people in those areas use a different tone, if they use a tone at all, if they use a different tone, they can get through their local repeater, but they won't be turning on our repeater during a band opening. So that's the main reason for these tones. Also, occasionally, somebody will set up what he calls a private repeater. In other words, he wants only him and his buddies to talk, maybe his family members, and as long as he clears it with the local frequency coordinating committee, and he has a frequency pair assigned to him, he can legally set up any tone he wants, maybe even one of the non-official tones, so that nobody but his family members can. So that's a partial explanation why those tones exist, Joe. Alrighty, Joe, on a quick break, do you have any other question you want to ask us while we've got the opportunity? Go ahead, Joe.
Until we are with a Caromantic.
Okay, yeah. Rich first. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, another reason for tone is with the carrier operators to quote, there's a lot of commercial transmitters in the area, especially in a big city. The repeater would be continuously getting tripped by signals that mix, and, you know, in other words, intermod on the input frequency. Because they require a PL tone, it says, hey, this signal is real. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, that's a good reason. When a person chooses a real good repeater site, if you had the druthers, you'd love to put your repeater on top of the Empire State Building, in which case you're going to have a whole lot of strong signals there. And so occasionally a mix occurs that makes a phony signal on the input of your repeater, and as Rich was saying, without that PL tone being present, the repeater will not respond to the phony signal. So back to you, Joe, in case you happen to have another question. KQLIW listening, my name is Dick.
Yeah, how you doing, Dick? I don't have any more questions. I guess I'll turn it back to you guys. But I'm just looking at my owner's manual right now. I'm just says over here setting the CTCSS tone frequency.
That's the right section, CTCSS. It goes by a number of names, as you can tell, and that gives it a little bit of confusion. But CTCSS, PL, a private line, what I think Motorola called it in the very beginning when they invented it, and later on people started calling it CTCSS. You're in the right section of the manual, and once you find out how to go through your owner's manual and understand its vocabulary, pretty soon you'll have your radio set correctly, your FT2800. Good luck with that operation. If you want to later on in that, give us another transmission, and maybe somebody listening to you will say, yep, I can hear the tone. In other words, somebody who's close enough to you will listen on the input and say, Joe's putting out the right tone, or at least it sounds like the right tone at the right amplitude, and all should be well when the repeater goes back to so-called normal operation. Okay, the next person who signed in, I think, was Frank, and I'm not sure whether or not Frank's got a question, but we're going to give him the opportunity anyhow. W2MLB, K2RIW, you got it, Frank.
Yeah, fine, thank you, K2RIW, the net, K2MLB. Yeah, this is going to be an ongoing thing. Dick, you may remember last week I was talking to you about shunt feeding the tower, and the first step is going to be the ground system, and you explained to me why the grid wouldn't work. You know, I have a restricted area about 60 by 120 feet to put radials in, and I think I would have been inclined, you know, to run them. North-south is the short dimension to the end of the property line, and then kind of bend it like an L to get the right length, because I don't have room for quarter-wave length. But I happen to find an old article in QST, which I didn't know about, where the fellow basically took the old George Brown 1937 study on radials that we've, you know, I guess that's the basis of everything. We've heard about it for 50 years, and anyway, he did a computer analysis. It's pretty complicated, but he took all the equations of Brown, and he made a series of graphs. And what it showed, and this is the reason for my question now, is that basically the flow in the ground current is nearer the base and diminishes as you get further and further away, you know, almost like when we center feed a dipole. And you mentioned Jerry Cervik before, and I remember his articles with the little short top hat, and God, what, I guess he went the route of 120 radials, and I thought that multiple radials were better suited, you know, for the short antenna. But anyway, what this fella did, he basically took varying lengths of antenna heights, one from one-tenth of a wave length electrically up to a full wavelength. And then he varied the length of the radials, and then he also varied the number of radials, and he integrated it to show all this data. And the thing that he came up with, which I guess is my question, is he basically said that if you took a given radius, in other words, within a given radius, let's say would be my 60 feet, that because the maximum flow of current is nearer the base, that you would have more total current in the shorter area, and you would be better off with many short radials than fewer longer ones. I know I'm kind of generalizing and not with the numbers, but I was about to try and get the longest radials that I could and, you know, run them around the yard anyway, but really based on these graphs, and it's pretty complex, but his, you know, his final summary is just that statement that you would have a more effective ground system with many, many shorter radials than fewer longer ones. So I'm wondering, expanding on that, Dick, or simplistically, if that would be a better thing for me to do in my short space here.
John, good question, Frank. And I've got an opinion, and I'm going to turn it over to Mel and see if he's got an opinion. If this is the best of all worlds, that ground plane radial system has a whole bunch of things branching out from the base of your antenna in a radial direction outward, and they're so closely spaced out at the perimeter that the RF wave with its wavelength, if for instance you're on 80 meters, where the wavelength is around 260 feet, and if the spacing out there is way under a tenth of a wavelength, which would be, 26 feet, if you get way under that number, the RF wave will consider your radial system as as if it was a continuous sheet of copper, the best you can possibly get. And this is the one disadvantage of vertical antennas. They're very dependent on the ground plane radial system. The ground plane radial system is trying to act like a sheet of copper, which radio-wise is a mirror. By way of that mirror, you are reflecting the real antenna into that mirror, and you're generating the phony antenna below the ground, the other half of the dipole. Your vertical antenna is a quarter wave instead of a half wave because it's only the upper half of the dipole. And by mirror imaging, you're trying to make the lower half. That's part of the reason why he wants to down many radials. Now, where he is saying a bunch of short ones are better than a few long ones, it is my opinion, he is saying that if you're limited in the total number of copper you're going to use, then yes, a bunch of short ones are better than a few long ones, because if you study the field that's around your quarter wave antenna, or the center of your dipole, it's very similar, when it's radiating, you've got an extremely strong magnetic field near the center of the dipole, which is near the base of your vertical radiator. Very strong magnetic field, which easily couples into the ground if there isn't a lot of radials in that area. The upper tip of the antenna with a strong E field, that does not couple into the ground very well. So therefore, the radials in close are more needed than the ones out far. Now, let's assume that you had a few long radials installed, and you started measuring the performance, the efficiency of your antenna. And in this case, efficiency really means how much of the power is being wasted by coupled into the earth, heating up the ground, making the worms happy in the wintertime. That's what you and I are trying to avoid here. So I've got a few long radials, and I've got a pretty nice operating antenna, and I start installing some more short radials in between. The performance will improve. So if I'm limited in copper, make a whole bunch of short ones. If I have the druthers, do it all. Lay down as much copper as you can, within reason. By the time the spacing between the copper wires anywhere gets to, let me pick a number, 5 feet, 7 feet, or something like that, and less, I think you're wasting your time. I think if you study the Jerry Civic curves and the other curves from the guy back in 1935, when the spacing on 80 meters, it's a wavelength phenomenon we're talking about here. It's a fraction of a wavelength spacing between the wires. So the spacing between the wires up close near the base is more important. But even out at the perimeter, if you're starting to get on 80 meters, numbers like 5 and 8 feet of spacing, and you start adding more copper than that, I think you're way into the law of diminishing returns. So on the assumption you're mounting your vertical antenna near the center of your property, lots of radials in close, even though you don't want to extend them beyond the neighbor's property, or you have the option of curving them over. In either case, you're going to get benefit. The more copper, the better, and it's just a matter of how many dollars you're willing to spend on copper, how much of the lawn you're willing to fill up with it, how long you've got to wait for it to sink down so it disappears if you're not doing some kind of a sinking operation. That's the way I see it. Let's see what Mel, who has spent a lot more time in HF than I have, let's see what he's got to say. Him and his group of guys there in Brooklyn, they do all these wild experiments at midnight, and they have to worry about what the neighbors say about them, but they're beyond that. K2KEY,
K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, very good. This is K2KEY. Well, to quote Jerry Civic, W2FMI again, he did extensive experiments, and I paid a particular attention to what he wrote about radial. Putting up the vertical radiator, in most cases, not a big deal, especially if you're only looking for one, say, to go up to 40 meters or something, you know. It's not a big deal. And, you know, a big installation. In fact, it's a fairly simple installation to put up that pipe. However, laying down the radials and what is desired. He did quite a bit of an experiment with it. And he went to a plate. I remember the picture of the plate. And he was able to put 120 radials. Now, this is what the FCC, I believe, usually recommended or insisted that the broadcast station. So he went through the 120 radios, and he made measurements. Even with the elaborate, now this was really an elaborate system that he put down, you know, to lay that much down. He was able to get down still just to 2 ohms of series loss resistance with 120 radios. Now, that to me is, of course, the ultimate. As you drop off the radios, of course, the point is, to try to get as many as you can put down, quarter wave radio. If you can't, in other words, put as much copper down as you can, because whatever you can is going to show some help. But again, like I say, to get to that magical number of about 2 ohms, like I said, he had to go to 100. He went to 120 radials. I think he was measuring it, of course, by the minute measurements that he could make. But he wanted to show that where you're going. In other words, he had a whole chart showing as he added radials how his resistance was changing. And he got to that magical number of 2 ohms that finally by 120 radials over.
W2TTT. W2TTT. I've got a lot of opinion on what's just expressed, but I'm going to hold it for a few seconds and see what TTT's got to say.